You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by one of my favorite people. She is Shoshana Bryan, a fabulous contributor to our public policy debate about particularly affairs of the Middle East. She does that at the Jewish Policy Center, where she is senior director. She writes brilliantly. She speaks lucidly. And she informs all of us brilliantly about some of the things that are generally very hard for us to make sense of. And I'm very pleased to say she has brought all of that to bear on a subject of great import that's relevant not just to what's going on in the Middle East, of course, but also here at home and around the world, namely the problem of biological warfare and the extent to which it may be something we've had a taste of in the form of this coronavirus, or CCP virus, as I prefer to call it, the Chinese Communist Party virus. She and her husband, Stephen Bryan, the former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, contributed a chapter to the Center for Security Policy's new book on the subject of biodefense, entitled Defending Against Bio Threats. We've been talking about it with several of the contributors, and we're very pleased to be able to do so with Shoshana Bryan today. Shoshana, welcome back. It's so good to have you. So your chapter with Steve is entitled Future Biowar: What the Bad Guys Have Learned from This Recent Event and How to Combat It. Tell us a little bit about, first of all, your assessment of this coronavirus pandemic from China. Was it intentional? Was it an accident that was intentionally disseminated? And does it, in fact, create kind of a playbook for bad guys, as you put it, to use these kinds of things against us in the future?
I have no idea if it was deliberately set out or accidentally set out, and it doesn't matter. What matters to us in the present and in the future is what the Chinese have learned from this. Let's say it was accidental. I don't care. If it was accidentally set out and it was meant to disable the United States, it didn't. As a military weapon, it is not a good biological weapon. However, there have been outcomes that must make the Chinese Communist government very happy. And then it doesn't matter where it came from. I don't want them to be happy. You look at our response. Look at our first responder. Look at our systems. Look at the how long it takes to make a vaccine. Look at the shortage of medical supplies that we faced in the beginning. Look at the change in our military deployments, particularly in the Pacific Ocean. All those things make the Chinese government happy.
And when they're happy, it's a source of unhappiness for the rest of us. Yeah. If it were simply an opportunistic event and it has had certain windfall benefits for the Chinese Communist Party and its agenda, whether that is simply to, you know, diminish our capacity to resist what they have in mind doing in the Western Pacific, or whether it is, you know, knocking the pegs out from under our economy, or defeating Donald Trump, or perhaps worse, you know, ultimately defeating the country itself, the United States. What kinds of insights do you think, perhaps not just the Chinese Communist Party, has taken from this affair, but other bad guys? And could you give us just a quick rendering of some of the things we better be doing about it?
Okay, there are a lot of things that we can be doing about it. Some of them apply strictly to China, frankly. For example, we have a ton of biological research. Well, less this week than we had a couple of months ago. But we had a ton of biological research with China, some of which was strictly civilian, some of which really flops over that line between things we can do, things we can't do. Since the line moves, we have to stop doing a lot of biological research with China. We just have to stop. But we're not doing it, for example, with Russia. We don't have Russian scientists here. So certain of those things you can only do with China, and you have to do them. A lot of it has to do with who is allowed to come to our universities, who is allowed to study what things here. We also, by the way, should look at systems, okay? International systems. Yes, the president has withdrawn us from the World Health Organization, which is okay. Actually, it's fine. But we should still be demanding that Taiwan get in, because Taiwan has research that should be part of the international system. So, communist China out, Taiwan in.
out altogether. That's an interesting thought. Let me ask you to pivot with me, if I can, quickly, because there's so much to talk with you about always, Shoshone Bryan, and so little time. But I did want to ask you about this event yesterday in which the United States government informed the Chinese government that it needed to close its consulate in Houston, Texas, and what ensued once those orders were delivered, and what it portends for not just sort of our diplomatic tit for tat, which will almost certainly flow from this, but what it says really about what the Chinese are doing more generally in our country.
So the Chinese were hacking vaccine research. They hack everything. But in this case, they were hacking vaccine research. And we are not the only country that has been hacked by these guys. The Chinese have been in Australia, Germany, Japan, lots of other places, trying to get their hands on our vaccine research. The Houston consulate was a center of that. So we closed them down. And then they burned a whole bunch of paper in the courtyard last night. It wasn't clear to me that people still had paper, but there's great video that someone took with a cell phone of them burning papers. They are claiming, of course, that we have escalated some kind of warfare with them, but they are the ones who are attacking our country and our systems, and we shut them down.
Indeed. And, you know, I mentioned in my commentary today examples of things that the Chinese Communist Party has been doing under diplomatic cover now for some time. And they run the gamut, to my way of thinking, of, you know, essentially running not just influence operations, but intimidation operations on our college campuses through, for example, the Confucius Institutes and something called the Chinese Students and Scholars Association. They've, of course, been recruiting very formidable American talent under what they call their Thousand Talents Program, which the FBI has begun rolling up at last. They have been also, I think it's fair to say, providing support for and enabling other kinds of espionage and presumably backing up the 20-plus companies that the Pentagon has described as Communist Chinese military companies doing business in this country, all of which, Shoshone Bryan, as a serious national security professional as you are, I'm sure you find appalling, as do I.
Well, I find the whole thing appalling. We should have known better about Chinese influence purchasing. The Gulf Arab states, the wealthy Arab states, have been doing it for years. So it's not that we haven't seen it before. We have. And the Chinese are doing it as well. Two of the people that were indicted, along with the closing of the Houston consulate, are well known to American authorities, not only for intimidating Americans, but they intimidate people back in China. One of the things that the Chinese government does is they allow people to study here and to steal our technology or do whatever it is that they do here, and they threaten them about coming back. It's almost impossible to defect because they keep your parents or they keep your children. And these two guys that were indicted are well known to be people who intimidate. So what you have on Chinese campuses are not lots of nice young students who just want to learn things and be engineers. On American campuses, but they face terrible intimidation and the requirement that they go home with stolen property, with these other things, and do these other things. So you have a double problem. You have Americans who are lured with Chinese money, which really should just never happen. I mean, Americans should just not do that. But you also have Chinese people who are sent here and intimidated terribly to steal, and it's amazing incentive for them to steal because mom is home, you know, being guarded by Chinese guards. Both of those things have to be stopped. The FBI has begun to close down Confucius Institutes and look at their money and look at the people, but they're a long way from finished this problem.
We're going to be talking more about this shortly with Diana West in terms of, in particular, the ties between the Chinese Communist Party and some of the Marxist groups that are now rioting in the streets of America and occupying parts of major cities and the like. But just staying with this topic, if I could, Shoshone Bryan, what you've described in terms of the coercion of Chinese nationals to engage in intellectual property theft or other kinds of espionage for that matter, or subversion, is something that is actually enshrined in Chinese law. The so-called National Intelligence Act has a requirement that on demand, by the government of China, the Chinese Communist Party, people who are either Chinese nationals or Chinese companies must perform these kinds of functions. And it, again, it goes to your larger point, doesn't it, that we have to be clear-eyed about who we're dealing with here and what we're up against if we are to survive it.
Yes, the state, the Chinese Communist state, considers everybody to be a soldier, okay? So if you're a soldier, you have to take orders and you take them from your government. And I guess, that's okay in a free society, in a free country. With free soldiers, they're not free. If you look at the security law that was just implemented in Hong Kong, the four activities that were criminalized in that law were secession, subversion, terrorism, and collusion. None of those have a definition that you and I would recognize. I mean, we think of subversion one way. They think of it as reading a book from an unauthorized author.
And they're applying this law, apparently, extraterritorially. So anybody could be subjected to it, Chinese or otherwise, anywhere in the world. We have to leave it at that. Shoshana Bryan, thank you so much, as always, for a riveting interview. I look forward to talking with you further and looking forward as well to the webinar that you and Charles Faddis will be doing together, entitled What Terrorists Will Learn from the 2020 Pandemic. That will take place at 1 o'clock on July 29th. Be sure to tune in for that at securefreedom.org. Thank you, Shoshana, for this great contribution to our important new book, Defending Against Bio Threats. Thank you very much for being with us. Come back to us again soon, Shoshana. All the best. Next up, we will speak with Trevor Loudon about the enemy within and more straight ahead. We'll be right back.